Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on every weekday evening, either at 6:30, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, or 11, or whatever time works for me and you. And tonight, I just want to say this show usually revolves around literary topics, theological topics, and political topics, or current events. And that is the usual areas of thought that we are concerned with in this show. And tonight I'm going to talk about, since I have an MDiv from Princeton Theological Seminary and have functioned as a pastor at one point, I would like to tell you that I have some knowledge, theological and biblical revelational knowledge that is of value that people should know about. The Word of God in the Bible, as well as theological topics, are what I hone in on to a certain extent. And tonight I'm going to talk about, before I go into a little background about myself, I'm going to talk about kingship, the concept of kingship both in the Hebrew Bible and in the Gospels. Jesus presents a different version of who a king is and what a king is as opposed to the Hebrew Bible, though there are resemblances. I'll go into that in a minute. This show is a politically incorrect show. Namely, we are concerned not with media hype, media lies, or media falsehoods. We are concerned with truth and honest discernment. We're not concerned with political rhetoric. We're concerned with honest discernment and truth and facts. That is what this show concerns itself with, and whatever the consequences, it's politically incorrect, not politically correct. If it's something is politically correct, it is essentially a lie or an attempt to manipulate. I wouldn't waste my time on political correctness. I wouldn't even think about it. I wouldn't even bother with it. I'm more interested in ideas and concepts and thoughts and honest discernment. The second thing is I'm a Christian, and I'm not changing that position in that respect. I believe in the full authority of Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation. And I, as has the church, the historical position of the church for 2,000 years has been the position of the church on this issue. And I adhere to the creeds of the church, the Athanasian, Nicene, and Apostles' Creed. They are the guides to my life, and they are the guides to every Christian's thoughts and life. They are the historical church. They are history. They are truth. They are Jesus. They are what he says about, what we want to say about him, and what we believe about him. That's what's important to me in the creeds. Second is, if I read a book, I'll read a Christian book, whether John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, Grace Abandoned to the Chief of Sinners, T.S. Eliot, or C.S. Lewis, or G.K. Chesterton, or St. Augustine, or St. Paul. The letters of St. Paul are the most profound philosophical and religious statements of religious truth that you can locate and find in the world. Take my word for it. There is nothing that is more significant than the epistles of Paul in the Bible. Or I also want to mention that St. Augustine is one of my idols also, and St. Thomas Aquinas, and Luther, Calvin, and Bonhoeffer, and many others of the saints, of the, so to speak, saints that constitute the church and its thoughts and its intellect. Next, I would like to say that I run two radio shows, Christian radio shows, although I welcome, let me say this, I welcome all comers and faiths and ideas and concepts. All are welcome. These are a podcast show and a blog talk radio show, and I'm pleased to say, extremely pleased to say, that my blog talk radio show has been accessed by Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq and many, many other countries. This is also true of my podcast show, where 4,300 people have honed in and listened to this show. I am happy that China and the Muslim countries are very interested in my work, and I'm very happy to have my dear Muslims as friends and people in China. And I welcome them, and I welcome all. If I want to know a Muslim, I want to dialogue with them. I want to interact with them. I want to understand them. I want to exchange views with them. I do not want to ignore them. I have no desire to ignore anybody, and I'm willing to listen to all views, including my dear Muslim friends, my dear Muslim brothers and sisters, and Hindu mothers and sisters, and Buddhist mothers and sisters. All are welcome to my thoughts and program. I also am an author. I have written 10 books. It says in the Christian Worldview. It says in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, a book on the parables, as well as most recently a book on the Psalms, a 390-page analysis of 150 Psalms. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, the Psalms are my spiritual food. They are the book that inspire me and move me beyond belief. John Donne, the great English poet, one of the greatest poets that ever lived, said of the Psalms that they were the manna of the church. He meant what he said, and what he said is true. When I read the Psalms, I am moved, I am raised. Just like with any great book that I read, I am raised, and my mind is stretched. As Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, he said, he gave a list of books, beginning with Herodotus and Aristotle and Plato, and said, these are the books that stretch your mind. And he said of television and computers and images that they were drugs and a waste of time. He's right. They are drugs. They're passive. Your mind isn't engaged in images. You're only tuning in and out of an image. You are not thinking in terms of complex works of thought in print. He also said that the Bible was the foundation of Western culture. He was right. It's no doubt it is true, and I wish that our schools would communicate that, because it's extremely important to know the Bible as the foundation of Western culture, along with the Greeks. I also wish to make clear that I'm writing other books, a book on the miracles in the Bible. I'm preparing two books of blogs, of my blogs, political, literary, and theological and biblical blogs. I think you'll find them interesting. I think you'll like them. I hope when I write a book, when I read a book, my mind is developed and stretched. And I say to you, young people, old people, all people, read books, read the great books, read War and Peace, read Resurrection by Tolstoy, read Anna Karenina, read Milton, read E.M. Foster, read these people that will stretch your mind and make you a better and more fully developed person. Don't waste your time on newspapers, the Post. Don't waste your time on those headlines. Don't waste your time on political nonsense. Get at the truth by the means of reading the books I mentioned. I also have written 3 very important articles in the Syracuse Law Review, which has been bought by the United States Supreme Court and the State Department, as well as the Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal, has bought two of my articles on the United States educational system and its failure, as well as sexual orientation discrimination. I abhor any kind of discrimination. I may disagree on a moral basis with people who are gay, and they can do what they want. In the civil society, they may do what they want. I have no issue with them. Within the church, there's an issue, and I'm in the church. Therefore, in transgender and gay people in the church, there is an issue. There's a moral issue. Outside of the church, I do not think they should be discriminated against. I think they should be given love and consideration and every help that I can offer them. Well, that's as much as I'm going to say about myself tonight. I'm also writing a book on the book of Job, one of the great books of the Bible. Not Jewish. He was an Edomite. And the book is formed on a Greek play. It's a Greek play. And I never forget the beginning of it, that Satan says he's walking up and down on the earth. And he is, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't think there's wickedness and evil and sin in the earth, you'd better open your eyes and figure it out. This is one of the most significant insights of the Christian faith in Genesis 2, the fall of man. And Milton chose it as the subject of his great epic poem, Paradise Lost, as well as Paradise Regained and Samson Agonistes. He wrote these great, great poems, Paradise Lost, an epic poem on the fall of man in Genesis, Paradise Regained, and Amphinomenes, taken from the book of Judges. He wrote these great, great poems while he was totally blind, which indicates the power of his intellect, which was so great, so very, very great. Now, I'm going to talk about kingship. It's a tricky subject because people have different concepts of what a king is and what a king means in the ancient world and in the modern world. For example, in the first book of 1 Kings, chapter 2, it is said that Solomon sat upon the throne of David and his kingdom was established. And in verse 46, it is said that his kingdom was established in the hand on Solomon. What we gather from these few words is that being a king and having a kingdom in the Hebrew Bible was a matter of gaining power. So, as I said in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 12, Solomon sat upon the throne of David, and his kingdom was established. And in verse 46, it is said that his kingdom was established. So having him being a king at that time was gaining power. In 1 Chronicles chapter 14, verse 2, it is said that David was established by the Lord as king over Israel, and that his kingdom was highly exalted. 1 Chronicles chapter 17, verse 11, again, it is said that the Jewish kingdom will be established in the book of Esther. Chapter 1, verse 4, the king Ahasuerus is represented as showing the riches of his royal glory and splendor and pomp and majesty. In Psalm 145, verse 11, the psalmist says that the saints shall speak of the glory of his kingdom and tell of his power, and goes on to say in verse 12 of that same psalm that it will be known, made known to the sons of men, the mighty deeds and glorious splendor in the Lord's kingdom. So, what do we gather from these statements about kings and kingdom? In chapter 14, 1 Chronicles 14, verse 2, David is established as the king of Israel, and it is said significantly his kingdom was highly exalted. Again, in 1 Chronicles chapter 17, verse 11, it is said the Jewish kingdom will be established. In the book of Esther, chapter 1, verse 4, King Ahasuerus is represented as showing the riches of his royal glory and splendor and pomp of his majesty. Again, we see the concept of what a king is. King Ahasuerus in Esther shows the riches of his glory and splendor and pomp. In Psalm 145, the psalmist says, the saints shall speak of the glory of his kingdom, and then he talks about his power. And then in verse 12, it says in that same psalm, it will be made known to the sons of men the mighty deeds and glorious splendor of the Lord's kingdom. So you can see what kingdom meant. It meant power, it meant splendor, it meant pomp. So in the Hebrew Bible, the notion of kingship and having a kingdom seems to be connected with riches, glory, and power. That seems to be the king concept in the Hebrew Bible. On the other hand, Jesus in the New Testament presents a completely different view of kingship and having a kingdom. In Matthew chapter 21, Jesus is presented as a king nearing Jerusalem, but comes with humility and mounted on a donkey. What kind of a king is this man, Jesus? He's not splendor. He's not mighty. He's not glorious. He comes into Jerusalem, comes with a humility and mounted on a donkey. The crowd surrounding Jesus, who appears in what way, as I just described, is hardly the appearance of a king. He is not seen. He's not presenting himself as a king. He presents himself as humble and mounted on a donkey. Nevertheless, the people spread their garments before him on the road and cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. Again, in Mark chapter 11, again, Jesus appears before the crowd on a donkey. In Luke chapter 19, again, Jesus comes in humility to Jerusalem. And nevertheless, he is proclaimed king despite being on a donkey and his humility. The people spread their garments before him on the road and cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. So who is this man, Jesus? What kind of a king is this? that he's on a donkey, and that he's humble, and he's not a splendid, great person. So what can we draw from this comparison I have presented in this essay on the concept of kingship as presented in the Hebrew Bible and represented in the New Testament? First of all, I have to note, in the Hebrew Bible, it's obvious and well known in the Hebrew Bible, presents many instances of saying about helping the poor and the widows who suffer in that society. So it can be said that the idea of a king in the Hebrew Bible does present from the presentation of kingship that Jesus presents to the world in the New Testament. It's a completely different emphasis and version. Jesus says to the world, being mounted on a donkey, that he is coming in humility and service. For the world of that time, as I said in the Hebrew Bible, being a king meant having power, riches, and importance. For the Christian and for Jesus, being a king is humility and using power and riches in the service of others. So it's quite clear that Jesus has a completely different version and presentation of kingship that he presents to the world. He comes in humility and service. And for the world of that time, being a king, as it was in the Hebrew Bible, meant having power, riches, and importance. For the Christian and for Jesus, being a king is humility and using power and riches in the service of others. So what do I say here about kingship? The world will always reject Jesus, the Son of God, whose kingdom is not material wealth and power, but service, love, and humility. The world will reject that concept. The forces of the world may reject the kingdom of Jesus. They could well reject it. The world always rejects the good. The world will always reject the Son of God, whose kingdom is not material, wealth, and power, but service, love, and humility. And the forces of the world may reject the Jesus kingdom, but it remains to be seen whose kingdom will be established and whose will not. That's the tricky point. That's the point of this essay. Many kings and dictators have risen and fallen. Their reign and power was temporary. The kingship of Jesus, which is founded on humility and service, despite attempts to disestablish it, nevertheless, for 2,000 years, has attracted adherents, both rich and poor, educated and uneducated. And it remains to be seen where the truth will be found and who will find it and who will be king and reign. As I said, the world always rejects the Son of God, whose kingdom is not material wealth and power, but service, love, and humility. The forces of the world may reject the kingdom of Jesus, but it remains to be seen whose kingdom will be established and whose will not. Many kings and dictators have risen and fallen. Their reign and power was temporary. The kingship of Jesus, founded on humility, despite attempts to disestablish it, nevertheless, for some 2,000 years, has attracted adherents, both rich and poor, educated and uneducated, and it remains to be seen who will be king and who will reign and who will not. That's as much as I'm going to say about kingship. If you want to read my essay on this, you can look at chapter 6 of my book, Essays on Faith, Politics, Culture, and Philosophy. I think you'll find it interesting, and I hope you found what I said insightful and thoughtful, and I ask you to think about it. And think about what I said, and always to look at Jesus and try to understand what he's trying to do, what he's saying, and what he's doing. What he says, every word he says and every action of Jesus is most profound and most deep, and we must understand it if we are to understand society and what is going on in the world. I've enjoyed this talk, and I hope you have too.